We're back, episode number 2. Welcome to the Random Dudes podcast. We got a good show for you guys here today. We got smaller crowd today. We got Sharag Tucker who's still here, Bill Pan and Benjamin Ricks here. We are excited to talk basketball with you guys. Had some big news in basketball last week.
Yes, indeed.
Hall of Fame class of 2016.
AI.
Is that the only player inducted?
That was the only important player inducted. Only.
Okay. Thank you.
Class of 2016 highlighted by Allen Iverson, Shaquille O'Neal, Yao Ming,
and Tom Izzo.
And Tom Izzo, Cheryl Swoops. Guys, what are your favorite memories of some of these players?
Oh man, we grew up with this generation of ballers, right? I mean, these are the players we watched growing up in our households across the nation, and it's sad to see these players go, and it's kind of a bittersweet moment for most of us, I would think. Seeing Shaq dominate through the 3-4 championships he had growing up, and then AI. I mean, we all want to be AI growing up in our respective junior high teams or in our driveway shooting around. We wanted to be Allen Iverson. He was the coolest.
If you grew up watching Allen Iverson and you did not practice a step back jumper through the legs,
because he never practiced, right?
So you'd be doing Iverson more never than practiced. Right? We practiced for him. But if you never did that, you need to go back to your childhood and practice that thousands of times in some driveway.
And then, last but not least, Yao Ming, my countryman. I think some people, some opinionated people out there, such as Jalen Rose on some other second-tier podcast, has said, they don't think that Yao Ming deserves a spot in the Hall of Fame purely based on numbers and performance. I don't know what you guys think about that. Do you guys agree? Do you guys think he deserves to be in there considering his short career? Or is he more of a kind of a diversity play, if you will?
I think this is similar to the MVP debate that happens every single year. What constitutes a Hall of Fame spot? Is it your numbers and your performance? Is your impact on the game of basketball? Is it your impact on your team? What does the Hall of Fame mean?
Well, just first and foremost, I think regardless of whether or not the Hall of Fame is meant for a pure numbers kind of award or if it's kind of a qualitative, a holistic approach, I think Yao Ming makes it regardless. I think he makes it in terms of the numbers and performance, and he makes it because of his social impact and his kind of globalization impact. Look, this guy was dominant, right, during his play. Yes, he ran into people like Shaq, who, is in his
put
class
him in his place.
Yeah, but that's like running into Kareem during the 90s and saying you are not as good and you shouldn't be at the Hall of Fame because you lose out to a guy like that, right? Running into Wilt and running into Bill Russell and running into players like that. We're talking about an all-time great. So if we're judging his performance, especially playoff performance, by the fact that he always played against Shaq, I think that kind of colors people's opinions of what he did. I mean, this guy was a 2010 career average guy with 2.5 blocks and range up to the three-point line. I mean, that's something you don't see basically ever, right?
I think he had the talent, but he was plagued by injuries, which really had a huge impact on his career, just shortened it down. I can understand both sides of the argument, but what I really think that we're seeing, especially in more recent years, is those who are getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, it's all about impact on the game.
Mm-hmm.
And Yao Ming having the international impact on really bringing the NBA to China and really just connecting all of that is incredible in what he's done.
Was he the first international superstar?
I don't know. I wouldn't think so.
I would think so.
I don't think so. We're going to have to look that up and get back to you guys on that.
We'll have to get our statisticians on that. We'll see what happens. I mean, he had a huge impact. I think he's probably the first household name, though, internationally, to have that impact. So I think when it just comes to impact, he had it there. And I think that's something actually very unique with this class, especially these three players between Yao Ming, Allen Iverson, and Shaquille O'Neal, is the impact that they had on the game outside of actually just being on the court. Because if you really think about what Allen Iverson brought to the game, he really kind of merged like the culture of basketball and hip hop together, bringing that all together and almost kind of just bringing a whole new generation and a whole new dynamic to the game.
Yeah, these were definitely cultural icons, all three of them.
Yeah, and then Shaquille O'Neal, like just Hollywood in basketball. Like,
Kazam! Greatest
movie of all time. Great, great movie. And then Yao Ming just with the international... just bring the like just the international presence to the game of basketball and something that really was an American sport. So honestly, great class. I give it up to all of them. They were great. Remember all of it. Guys.
Yes.
We have a first on the Random Dudes podcast. We have a special guest.
Celebrity.
Special guest.
Celebrity that we are going to talk about basketball with.
I'm excited.
We're excited to introduce... our first guest ever on the podcast.
Woo! No pressure.
Dr. Robert Rowe. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for being here. Now we got to give him some intro. We got to give him some, what are his accolades?
I think you named the one.
Number one, he's a doctor. Graduate of the Wake Forest Medical School.
That's right.
And is a general surgeon. But before all of that, a lifelong basketball fan.
Right. That's me. Thanks, guys, for having me on. I feel like, you know, when the rookies get drafted, they're always like, oh, I can't wait to play with those guys I've been watching on TV for so many years, except for it just happened in a week, which is awesome.
Because we're so big.
Because you guys, well, I will say that I've listened to all of your podcasts, and they are amazing. But I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to... be with you guys in this capacity. My dreams in life were, my dream really was to be a professional basketball playing, baseball playing doctor. So I'm 1 for 3, nice. Which is pretty good. And absolutely, yeah, I grew up in Atlanta, watched the Hawks play, watched all the teams Atlanta and beat the Hawks. So I've been a lifelong b-ball fan. And my one accolade you didn't mention was that I was a whopping 8 for 8 from the free throw line in high school and varsity. So,
y'all
100%?
That's right. 100%. So I'm going to teach Dwight Howard now that he's Atlanta.
Good luck with that.
When you tell that story from now on, cut out the 8 for 8. Just say, I shot 100%.
That's what I usually say. And everyone's like, you shoot one free throw? I'm like, no, I shot 8, son. Take that. But thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
No, what are your thoughts on the Hall of Fame class?
Bill said it best. This was like our generation. This is kind of like the beginning of our generation of players. I really enjoyed all of them. That said, I actually didn't really like Allen Iverson's game. I was a purist. I was a point guard should be passing the ball type of person.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm that weirdo. But and I did not like ball hogs growing up. But what I really admired about Iverson was that he was just fearless and tenacious, and he, despite the fact that he was what listed at like 6'1", maybe 170 pounds or so, would just take it to the rim at a time where centers were still all over the place. And amazing that he got through all those injuries. Yeah, you can still foul, and they did foul him hard, and he flew over the court, and he got back up and kept playing. That was great. Shaq, the only thing that I would mention about him that you guys did mention the awesome Academy Award nominated Kazam, but the real movie that I loved as a kid was actually a good movie, was Blue Chips. That movie,
Penny Hardaway
and some random guy they named Ricky Rowe, that is my uncle's name, that I thought was a professional basketball player, never was. That's what really stuck out, and the fact that I of course owned Shaq's rap album growing up, because I was in the right age to think that was music. But yeah, and then Yao, you guys kind of touched on the injuries taking away from his career, and I definitely have to agree with that. I do think that he was almost a genetic experiment. His dad was 6'7", his mom was 6'3", both ball players.
Mm-hmm. His wife is also a ball player.
It's exactly my point. His wife was also a 6'3 ball player, so following his father's footsteps, and their daughter, who I think is like 6 years old now, I'm sure is already taller than I am. I loved watching them growing up, and it's crazy to think that they've been done for this long, and amazing to think what Yao would have been like if he had been able to play as long as Shaq did, but it was great. It was fun watching all of them.
Let's touch on some of these topics. Let's take advantage of your medical expertise and how it relates to basketball.
It's very liberal.
One of the big things going on recently has been the players wanting more time off, getting rid of some of these back-to-back-to-back games. And what are your thoughts? Like, how has the game evolved, and how is it impacting players' bodies? Is this a real issue, or are they wimps? Or are they just not as tough as they used to be?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question, and you can get really deep into it. But I mean, are they wimps? They might be, but I think there are other factors at play too. When I think of NBA injuries in particular, especially and also basketball injuries that we all experience, we're just playing on the court. I think of two different types. You think of the kind of the catastrophic kind of knee injuries, ligament injuries, Achilles tendon injuries, that sort of stuff that sidelines you for the year or longer. And then you think of like the nagging injuries, the injuries that don't require surgery, they just require time and rest, and they just kind of rear their ugly head every few weeks or whatever, kind of the Steph Curry ankle injuries and stuff like that. And so I think actually the cause of a lot of those are probably similar. As you would imagine, the NBA doesn't have a lot of data published about their injuries, but they do have to at least list their injuries in their weekly reports, as we all can see on NBA.com and that sort of stuff. And so the injuries that we're seeing now aren't necessarily logged in like a database quite yet, but I did look at an article that looked at the seasons like 88 and 89 through 2005. And it lists every single injury that an NBA player had, or sickness, any reason to go to the hospital, doctor, anything. And the top injuries that you see are all injuries that only, work, or only get better with rest. So like lateral ankle sprains had the most. What we call patellofemoral inflammation, which is just kind of knee inflammation where your kneecap rubs against your thigh bone. Lumbar strains, lower back strains, and then hamstring strains. Those are all things that take time to get better. And though all those are increasing, even beyond this study, into today, the schedule hasn't really changed all that much, and you guys can speak to that a little bit. But what has changed is the players have changed a little bit. We're talking about the Hall of Fame, the two centers, they were true centers. Long gone are the days of the center, power forward, small forward, shooting guard, point guard kind of team setup. You have you have the stretch fours. You have 7 foot tall guys who are expected to shoot threes, drive to the hole with explosion, and then also explode out to defend the three. That's a lot of wear and tear on knees and joints and tendons and ligaments that usually players like that would just kind of jog down to the block and play post ball. So you have that. And then, of course, with the nagging injuries, you just have not a lot of time to repair your body. And I think that stems back, and I'll step back after this comment, that these basketball players are only basketball players and have only been basketball players for most of their lives. Generations ago, not that long ago, but at least a generation ago, basketball players were just really good athletes that played basketball, and then as they got older, they concentrated on basketball. So you would play football during football season and, run track or play soccer or whatever. And now, because of the explosion of AAU ball, when you're 10 or 11 years old, they see that you're going to be 6'5 and you can dribble with your opposite hand, you're playing AAU ball when you're not playing at your school, and it just continues and continues and continues. I was actually listening to an interview with Dr. Marcus Elliott. He works for a company called P3. They do a lot of analytics for injury prevention and performance enhancement. And he was saying that a lot of the high school players he was looking at are showing compensatory movements for lagging injuries that are always around, knee injuries, ankle injuries that I was talking about. So they're already altering how they're playing the game, how they're running, how they're jumping, because they have these injuries that normally wouldn't rear their ugly head until well into someone's NBA career. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what you guys think about how AAU affects that, how they have a lot more miles on their NBA bodies by the time they even get to the pros.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what you said, one of the things you said kind of hit home, which was, hey, these are basketball players through and through, right? You see these videos on YouTube of these 8-year-olds crossing up everybody and taking it to the hole. before, it was definitely a situation where you're playing Little League, you're playing, Pee Wee football, and you are kind of an all-around athlete, maybe recruiting for both, you know, football and baseball and basketball coming to college. And nowadays, you definitely see a lot more kids kind of focusing and honing on one sport and diving deep into that, and that could be part of the issue there. I think another part of it might be just the fact that the injuries we do see now are just more widely broadcasted, right? Because of the internet age, we have the ability to see videos of Paul George having his catastrophic injury last year, and those things kind of stick in our mind a little more. So I don't know, Dr. Rob, if you think that it's not so much that the occurrence of these injuries are becoming more and more frequent, but also just the kind of eyeballs on these injuries physically happening through video is making this a bigger topic in our minds. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really a question. I think unfortunately we're not going to know really the raw data and the analysis of that data until kind of a few years from now, based on what we're seeing now. I think it's really interesting because you have a lot of different factors too. Not only are injuries more kind of sensationalized, but you also have a lot of players who see those injuries and are like, oh, I need to take a little more time off from this, and then that's a bigger deal. And then of course you have the Popoviches of the world who are resting their players for playoff time, not only so they're fresh, but also just any time you're not on the court, you're decreasing your chances of having that catastrophic injury too. And I don't know. I mean, that certainly as a fan, it stinks because now you're not you only can go to one or two games a year, and because you can only afford it, or you don't live in an NBA town and you want to finally go see a game, and then the top two players aren't playing or something like that. And it's unfortunate, but from a medical standpoint, I kind of like that. Unless something changes in the NBA, there's really no way to get around that injury. I think you're right. The sensational injuries, I don't necessarily think are increasing per se. We'll see what the numbers say. But you're right. It's a lot more exposure. There's a lot more fear of those injuries because once someone gets one of those, basically that whole team season is over if they're a marquee player. But I do think the nagging injuries are kind of increasing. You have kind of these thoroughbred athletes who are now bigger, stronger, faster than they've ever been. And they're expected to go just as hard as their predecessors did. Just Kobe said the same thing after he retired. You know, I thought 82 is 82. And just like, you know, Isaiah used to do and Jordan used to do and, you know, Kareem used to do. But now, considering that I played AAU basketball, I've been playing basketball year-round, international ball, all that sort of stuff, that's a huge part of their mentality as well. Like, what, you know, how much say do the players have into saying, I don't know, I need to take time off from this, even though, you know, the fans might not necessarily enjoy it.
Yeah. I think there's another point about the old school players, because back in the day, professionals didn't play in the Olympics or in FIBA tournaments. Now basketball is year-round.
Yeah.
So you have players like LeBron not playing in the Olympics because he needs the rest. I agree with the Popovich point that you made. I like Popovich resting his players. The Spurs are usually pretty healthy going into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. This year we had Steph got injured. Who was the big fellow on Toronto? Jonas Valanciunas. He was tearing it up.
He was.
Until he got
it. And then until he tore it.
What was it? 2 years ago, Russell Westbrook, when Patrick Beverley decided to be in.
To be Patrick Beverley.
To be Patrick Beverley.
But those are freak accidents. I mean, that's like not something that you can prevent, and that's not something that wear and tear puts on you and causes that.
Not necessarily. I mean, there's it depends. Like anything, you know. We love our facts in medicine, but some of them, it's still a lot of opinion. And like I said, the more minutes you play, the more chances of a freak accident. But, I mean, you're not necessarily going to sit people in minutes because you want to avoid the ACL tear. That's not what you're trying to avoid. What you're trying to avoid is someone – I don't know if any of you guys have had any of those injuries to talk about, or like pulling your hamstring or straining your back. Mm-hmm. I usually have all four of those injuries at once. But once you do that in the season – there is nothing. It takes like 4 to 6 weeks to actually fully heal from like a hamstring injury, for example. Mm-hmm. How often do players take 6 weeks off for a hamstring? Not particularly often. Plus, as you guys probably know as well, anecdotally, if you feel good, you're going to go out and play. The problem is you can't simulate 100% in the game, and then you get out there and you explode to the hoop, and all of a sudden you tweak your ankle or your hamstring again, and it just continues to happen and happen and happen. And that's I think the prime example of that is Steph. I mean, like, his, I don't think, honestly, even if he rests all off season, this is just my personal opinion, no evidence to back this up, I mean his ankles are always gonna be bad.
Make like glass.
It's just, make it's glass. I mean, we talked about Grant Hill earlier. His ankles were always going to be bad. Once you kind of injure those things, it's kind of hard to get better. But at the same time, what you really want is just the time to completely heal it. But you're not going to get that during the regular season. Yeah. And then you're definitely not going to get it if you want to play international ball too.
So if you're not going to get that during the regular season, how do you feel about shortening the season to 70 to 75 games? To reduce back-to-back nights, to give players the opportunity to get rest.
As a fan, which is with just the way that it's being played, with the way Popovich sits players as a fan, if I'm showing up and the Spurs aren't playing Kawhi Leonard, I'm not getting my money's worth. So, yeah. I mean, if they were to reduce the number of games and it actually meant that your stars were always playing,
yeah,
I'd be in favor of that. My concern, though, is that they're still just going to sit the players even if there is a reduced schedule. And that it's unpredictable with the coaches. You don't know. And I feel like if you just push it back to 75 games, then everyone's going to be like, well, let's make it 70 games. And like, when are we going to finally get where the season's only like six games or it's round robin and then let's just have a tournament?
It's like intramurals.
It's just like intramurals. That's how we pick a champion. I just don't know how far you go and where it stops.
Yeah, part of that discussion. Yeah, and part of that is kind of rolled up in the idea of, okay, we are playing 70, or right now we're playing 82 games for a spot in a tournament where you don't get buys. Where the differentiation between the 1 and the 4 and the 3 seed sometimes does not matter as much as it seems. And so you're less incentivized to really kind of wear down your players over 82 games as opposed to preparing for this one tournament. And so it might be an unpopular opinion, but maybe part of the solution is to make it more rewarding to do well in the regular season, as well as shortening the number of games in conjunction together. Yeah. So now you have a situation more like the NFL where each game counts, right? Regardless of the opponent, each game counts. You're putting it all out there, but you're playing less, and so there's less chance for you to do some serious damage to your body, and then also rewarding the teams that come out and give the fans what they paid for, right? What do you guys think about that kind of approach, that trajectory?
I have no idea what you just said. Honestly, I have no idea what you just said. Yeah. I heard a monologue. Yep, I was with you.
That was either like absolute genius, and it's just so far over our heads that we have no idea what happened, or maybe something else. I'm not sure.
All right. You know what?
But
moving on.
Bottom line is, I think from a healthcare standpoint, my opinion is shorter season is better. From a game standpoint, over the same amount of time, I think is fine. But as a fan, I think you're absolutely right. I think that people will still rest their players the same way they would anyway. And I know from personal experience, still spurned by a middle school Hawks-Lakers game where Shaq and Kobe did not play on my birthday, I am bummed when players aren't around on the court, especially when they don't have like a devastating injury or anything like that.
Come on, Shaq, make it right.
Yeah. Make it right. Come on, buddy. But yeah, it's hard. I mean, it's hard to separate kind of fandom from kind of healthcare, in my opinion. But sometimes you have to do that. And the NBA obviously isn't in the business of not making as much money as they possibly can.
Yeah.
So there's that too.
No, it's all interesting. Let's switch gears. I want to talk about, we've kind of been talking about generalities in health. I want to talk about a story that's been fascinating to me, which is the Chris Bosh story. Now, Chris Bosh says he is ready. He's had his blood clot issues. It's ended his last two seasons. Last year during the playoffs is basically when they pulled him. He said he was ready to play everything. He's been working out this summer, says he looks great, feels great. He's got his own doctors who have cleared him. The Heat doctors have not yet gotten to that point. What is going on? What are your thoughts with this in terms of blood clots? Like, are they babying him, or do you think he's ready to play, or what's going on?
That's a really good, really good question. This story is incredibly fascinating to me as well. Georgia Tech zone Chris Bosh, by the way.
Hey, there you go. Atlanta.
For a year. So just the quick background on blood clots is when you're a seemingly young, healthy individual. Sometimes you do get a blood clot. Other athletes have got it. Serena Williams in tennis got one. They're doing a lot of traveling. Blood clots usually form in healthy people when you are on like long flights or train rides and you don't get up and move around. They usually form in your big veins in your leg. So they're called deep vein thrombosis. And then once you do get up and kind of move around, those clots can travel to your lungs. And that's what happened to Chris. Initially, he had a pulmonary embolus, and so that clot went up to his lungs. He felt crummy. He went to the doctor. Turns out he had what is considered a life-threatening issue. That's treated with blood thinners, which is what he was treated with, and everything went away. He got better, and he played again. So we all kind of know that. The weird thing, though, is that it happened again. That doesn't usually happen in really young, healthy people. And he's a very thoughtful, kind of pretty smart NBA player. I think we can all agree that he's very well spoken and he kind of knows what's going on. He seems like a very self-aware kind of person. And yet he had that issue again after being off blood thinners. Mm-hmm. This can be very dangerous. Blood clots can kill you. So let's get that, put that on the table first of all. If you don't take blood thinners, you have a chance, especially since he's already had a history of multiple blood clots now, of getting more blood clots. If they travel to the lungs again, when you're playing a game, for example, and you're on the court and you're exerting a lot and you need a lot of oxygen demand, that could be catastrophic. On the other hand, if you were to go back on blood thinners to prevent that, then playing, I think, is out of the question, because if you get hit, it can cause internal bleeding, it can cause bleeding on the brain. He could literally die within minutes of that happening.
What kind of blood thinners are we talking about? Aspirin? What's the difference between aspirin or what is he taking?
I think this is the medication he took, but traditionally you take a warfarin or coumadin. This is a kind of a pretty strong blood thinner that you take after your first blood clot, and you take that for at least 3 months. Usually longer, and then if you have a history of multiple blood clots, some people are on it for the rest of their lives. Usually you're older when you have that issue. So this is not the typical kind of aspirin, small amount of aspirin dosage. This would be something that's pretty significant. More significant enough that you shouldn't be able to play on blood thinners. And you brought up the thought that his doctors had cleared him. Well, that's true. But he had to look for those doctors. The doctors that originally treated him and advised him, even outside the Heat organization, said you should really make sure that you are completely healthy before you go back out on the court. And the fact that you've had blood clots more than once means that there's a really good chance that you could have it again. So you should consider being on blood thinners longer. And then he did find some physicians who say that it's okay to be treated without blood thinners with close monitoring and that sort of thing. I'm not particularly fond of that idea, but like you said, the Heat organization is not in the business of having someone have a catastrophic event on the court or just as a part of the Heat, whether it's happening on the court or whether it happens in practice or after a game or something like that. That's a really dangerous situation they want to be in. They certainly, from a liability standpoint, and also they care about Chris, I'm sure. Yeah. They don't want anything like that bad to happen to them. So that's kind of the medical background at that point. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see what you guys think, considering what I've said. And obviously, if anyone's listening who is a healthcare professional, they probably will comment if I said anything incorrect. But
what I think is interesting, though, is that, if there's any team that is up for handling a situation like this, it is the Miami Heat, because of what happened with Alonzo Mourning.
Yes.
In the early 2000s, had his kidney issues. They sat him out and went through it. I honestly think Miami is actually looking out for Chris Bosh. They're trying to prevent him from hurting himself, because we always hear about the Heat Mafia. Like, they love each other. They literally are a family. Like, they look out for one another. And I honestly think they're genuinely concerned with Chris Bosh, and just they know the type of competitor that he is. And if what you're saying, Dr. Rowe, is that if he's going to go out there, if he just kind of gets elbowed hard enough that it causes a big enough bruise or something like that, like, his life could be on the line on those blood thinners. They don't want to take that chance.
Yeah. It seems like both of the options that you kind of laid out, Dr. Rowe, one, which is being on blood thinners, you can't risk getting hit hard. And in the NBA, as a big man, you're going to get hit hard a lot. So that's a bad chance to take. And then if you're not on blood thinners, the chances of having a clot again can also be fatal. I'm one of those people where if there's anything that involves chances of fatal, I'm out.
Chances of fatal.
You need to get out of there.
Yeah. I agree with you guys' sentiments. I don't think you should play. However, the second part of the discussion is whether or not he should have the right to play, regardless of what the Heat want him to do, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's something that's kind of in Chris Bosh's mind, right? He wants to play. He said the other day in the press conference, you know, he's a baller. That's what he does. He balls. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And just think what's going on with Miami right now. I mean, Dwayne Wade just left.
Yeah.
He's
they
the
need
alpha dog.
Yeah.
Last 2 years, I mean, everyone's talking about Hassan Whiteside like being like the up and coming guy for the Heat. Chris Bosh is like, hey, look right. at me,
what
man.
About me?
I'm like a 12-time All-Star. Like, I'm a stud here. And I think that's what he wants
yeah,
to do.
He wants to
show that he is still an elite player, which I think he is. I still think he could carry this team.
I think he's better than Whiteside for sure.
But I mean, when your life is on the line.
Yeah. It's crazy. An interesting aside that I read recently is, I don't know if you guys know about the like Hank Gather story. He's a player. He played for Loyola Marymount years ago, and he collapsed, not blood clot related, but he collapsed on the court shortly after the game. I'm not really sure. There's a 30 for 30 on him. It's awesome. But he had a heart issue. He had cardiomyopathy, and sometimes you'll hear about players who collapse on the court for this exact reason, especially basketball players. Eric Spoelstra was on the court when that happened.
No, no way.
Yeah. And so, you know, obviously he's not making the big decisions. We know who's making the decisions of the Heat. But at the same time, you know, he's sitting there like, there's no, if we can avoid anything horrible happening to anyone, like he saw it firsthand as a teenager, I'm sure he's thinking to himself, I do not want this to happen again. Yeah. I'm sure he cares a lot about Chris. They talk about it all in the NFL and stuff all the time. Like, you have to think about the player's best interest because they're going to want to play. And Chris mm-hmm. is always going to want to play. I think you're right. Whether he should have a right to or not, I honestly think that, you know, we always tell patients all the time, like, this is what we recommend you do. We can never prevent you from doing that, but we're also not their employer. And so it's up to them to figure that out. But obviously, I think we're all in one accord that I don't think he should play until he's 100% cleared by most physicians that he can come across. The question I have for you guys, and I think I'll be done, is what if he did take like a whole year off? Let's say he took a whole year off, and after a whole year, he had no blood clots. All the doctors said he was totally fine. He wasn't any blood thinners. Would either the Heat want him back after a whole year of not playing basketball? Or would another team snatch him up at that point if they happen to release him after not playing a whole year? Like, what would be his appeal if not playing since, you know, the end of last season?
I definitely feel like that plays into his decision of, you know, trying to play this year too, right? He realizes his value is going to diminish greatly. One, because of his age, and two, because of health risks. Not so much, you know, I have an injury now, but I have the possibility of screwing my team over in the future by, you know, having some serious complication come up again. And so I think in the future he will, you know, he's a great basketball player. So somebody will take him, but it's a matter of his value on the market, his role on that team, and his ability to be kind of top dog again on a team. I don't think he's going to get that chance outside of this year.
I think it's hard, man. Because I don't think there's any amount of like liability waiver he can sign or whatever with the Heat, with the NBA or whatever, that would convince anyone to let him play. Because if I'm the NBA and Chris Bosh says, hey, no liability on you, it's all on me, whatever, you can't have that image of a guy collapsing
dying
on the floor
on
or anything
TV,
and dying you know? While playing your game. You cannot let that happen. I mean, I want to see Chris Bosh play. I still think he can play. I still think he can play at a very elite level, be an all-star. Be a superstar in the league, but I can't see it happening. And I think there's a lot of interesting dynamics that are going along with how the Heat look from this perspective. Like, I think there's a lot of work that they can do, like, on the PR level to kind of improve their image. Because, I mean, a lot of people are just saying, well, hey, if they keep him on the bench till February, his salary comes off the books, opens up a lot of salary cap space for them to sign new players to move on. Mm-hmm. But again, I generally think they're concerned with his life, which I think they need to be more upfront about. And I think there just needs to be a lot more collaboration between the team doctors and his doctors. And there just needs to be more transparency in that whole process. Because I think right now, with the way that it's looking, I mean, who knows what to believe who in this and what's going on.
And I think that's what I always thought when I was every time I read something about this, I always felt like I was missing something. Mm-hmm. There was something that wasn't said. And that's true for any physician who listens to anything about medicine through the eyes of a sports fan. They don't tell details about anything, but particularly in this, like, there just seems to be something that's not talked about that exists there, and I think that's very weird to me. And then also from Bosch's standpoint, I understand Baller's ball, I get that, but he has nothing to prove. He's had an amazing career. He already has championships. He has all the money he needs. He seems to be healthy otherwise, I guess. He's, you know, in the grand scheme of things, he's young. I just don't understand why you jeopardize that, even for an amazing career like playing professional basketball, which would be amazing for all of us. But I just don't think any of that is worth the risk. He's already done everything he needs to do, I think.
Yeah. Baller's ball, though, I think that's the hardest thing. Dr. Rowe, thank you so much for being in the office.
Oh, thanks,
being
man.
In the studio, doing this with us today.
Thanks, random dudes.
Really appreciate it. Guys, you can look forward for more interviews, more basketball chat on the Random Dudes podcast. Subscribe, join us. Until next time, see you guys later.
Peace.
Bye.